Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome the new broadcaster to the Lincoln Salt Dogs, the new full-time broadcaster, I guess we should say, Connor Clark. Connor, thanks for joining Kevin and I here tonight.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it, and glad to be with you.
So I hope full-time is the right way to describe this. Tell us a little bit about taking over there for our buddy Michael Dixon.
Yeah, so I've been with the Salt Dogs for two seasons now as Michael's number two. So I've been able to do a handful of innings for 50 home games the last two seasons, work alongside Michael, obviously get to know everybody within the organization, which has been great, meet new people around the league the last 2 years, which was awesome. So, I was just kind of working alongside him for a while, and then just kind of deciding what I wanted to look for after college, because I'm going to graduate here in May from the University of Nebraska. So as I was looking around, you know, it was kind of coming up empty, was really trying to get into affiliated ball. The job cycle this time around was kind of odd. It didn't really feel like there was very much open, but maybe that's just me. But I got a call from Michael a little over a week ago at this point, and he told me that he wasn't returning anymore, which is something I wasn't expecting, because he got a gig down in Dallas, which is great. So he called me and told me to expect a call from our general manager, Shane Tritz, and he was going to offer me the job, which he did, and I gladly accepted. So really excited to be back with an organization that's so much fun to work with. I've had a blast the last two seasons with them. Going to be a little weird being the number one there, probably at first without Michael, but overall, I'm really excited for the job, and it's going to be fun to be back at Haymarket Park.
When Kevin pointed out to me about the tweet about you taking over the job, you know, the first thing that he said to me was, this just seemed like such a perfect fit for you to take over for Michael. It just seemed like you were just destined to be the Salt Dogs guy. Is that kind of the way that you viewed this?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely works out well for all parties involved, especially because of how unexpected, you know, the kind of timeline that this has been on. I mean, I'm in Lincoln right now. Obviously, as I said before, I go to school in Lincoln. I'm originally from northern suburbs of Chicago's, but obviously I've been pretty accustomed to Lincoln at this point, being here for 4 years, so that worked out well. Obviously, the Salt Dogs didn't really have to open a formal search, so that kind of helped out on their end. So, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good situation for all parties involved, and I'm really excited to be there. And, again, I've had a great time being there the last 2 years, and now really being able to dive in, do all 100 games, travel with the guys, and just really kind of embody and embrace the real grind of minor league baseball, because you experience that to a certain extent doing only home games, but now that the travel is involved and all that other good stuff, it's definitely going to be a newer challenge. But yeah, I mean, I think it works out for everybody involved, and it's kind of a seamless transition too, so I'm glad it worked out the way it did.
Now, you said you were finishing up at University of Nebraska. Is there going to be any conflict with finishing up at the school and then being full-time with the Salt Dogs, or is that something you can do remotely?
Well, luckily, there's only 1 week of overlap between the season and school, and that 1 week is finals week. And usually that is, I mean, you don't have a class, obviously, during finals week in college, so that's just, you know, kind of moving around a couple of assignments here and there. So really shouldn't be too difficult. And obviously the ballpark is steps away from campus pretty much. And we are on the road to start the year, which will be a little bit interesting. But luckily there's not more than a week worth of overlap. I don't got to move anywhere new, which is nice as well. So it shouldn't be too difficult.
So we're anticipating you studying for your finals during those first few games of the season. So we're going to get some information about your exams while you're also providing with commentary on the games. We're going to get a little of that.
Well, hopefully we're not getting blown out up in Fargo, but if we are, I can recite every word from a textbook over the air to try and appease the audience there.
We're going to get a little education then at the same time. That'll be good for us.
And you're in Fargo, exactly, so yeah. I mean, if you have any questions on anything as far as your finals go, you got Jack Michaels right there. He knows everything about everything.
That is true. Jack is, a never-ending thesaurus, dictionary, whatever you want to say. But yeah, that guy his pockets are deep when it comes to knowledge about stuff.
And if he doesn't know, Absolutely. He'll make something up. I mean, he's got a good system.
Connor, I have to tell you is that listening to you broadcast over the last couple of years and just hearing you on our conversation here tonight, you just have such a natural speaking voice. Did you always feel like broadcasting or kind of public speaking was where you were destined to be at?
Well, that's a good question because this all kind of started when I was a freshman in high school. I always played sports in middle school and even throughout high school. I was involved in athletics playing-wise. But I played football my freshman year of high school at Lake Forest. And then I tried out for the basketball team. And basketball has been my favorite sport my entire life. I think it always will be. But I went to go try out for the team, and I didn't end up making it. But I still wanted to be a part of the program in some way, shape, or form. And in eighth grade the year prior, I was, kind of messing around with, broadcasting and all that good stuff and seeing if I liked it or not. It was something that intrigued me, but it wasn't anything I took super seriously. And so I thought about that. I'm like, hey, I emailed the head varsity basketball coach. I'm like, hey, can I do this for you guys? And then he ended up connecting me with our what we call new media teacher, which is a class at that high school. And he was able to set me up with equipment. And I did two games my freshman year. That's kind of where it all got started. And after those two games, I was like, I was hooked. So from that point on, it really just kind of continued. My sophomore year, we did every home basketball game and football game, and we did that until I graduated in spring of 2020. So that's kind of where it all started. Before that, I really didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I kind of wanted to do something in sports. I just didn't know where in sports. And then that happened, and then all of a sudden we're here. So it's worked out quite well.
You were talking about that you were the number two guy to Michael the last couple of years. Will you have a number two guy for you this year now that you moved up to the big spot?
This year, I don't think so, for two reasons. One, because of how quickly this turnaround is happening. They technically didn't have a number two position when I asked. I actually emailed Michael directly in the 2022 offseason, asking if that was something that I could do. And he said, they don't really have a position for that, but he could ask Charlie Meyer, our president. And Charlie ended up giving it the green light. So that's kind of how it was almost kind of created for me. It was still kind of an intern position, but it was very catered to what I was there to do. And then number two is, I feel like a lot of really good broadcasters in today's, profession, I've had that season where they do everything solo. I think it can, help me get better, help me tell stories better, fill the air better. So I think it'll just be a good experience to have to do 100 games solo and kind of really embody kind of grind, as I said before, and really kind of experience what that's like.
Now, the stories part is interesting for us because Kevin and I like to hear how different broadcasters present their game. And so tell us a little bit about what your style is like. What can we expect from a Salt Dogs broadcast this year?
Yeah, I mean, I like to have fun. I like to keep things light. That's something I've definitely learned over the last couple of years, too, in professional baseball is you have so many games and so many days. So you might as well have fun with it. Obviously, to keep track of stats. I really like pointing out trends on the air, whether that's, the top four in the lineup has done this today, or last year, Luke Roskam went on a 45-game on-base streak, which is the longest for the Salt Dogs since 09, something like that. Like, that's really important. And then, obviously, the storytelling of the players, too, is also something to look out for as well. I mean, we have a pitcher named Abdallah Arise, who's returning from last year, and he learned the English language by watching the movie Forrest Gump. So, I mean, when you have stories like that in the clubhouse, you better not pass those up, because that's just so unique and so just funny for, you know, the average baseball fan. Like, everybody knows what Forrest Gump is, and the fact that this dude knows English because of that movie is pretty funny. So I just like to combine those two, especially because, you know, at the end of the day, too, you're doing a service to the players and to the people who are listening, because a lot of those people who are listening are those parents' players, or those players' parents, rather. And so just being able to shed light on where they've come from and how they've gotten to where they are is pretty important to the broadcast. So I like to highlight that.
I have to imagine you're in a pretty good spot compared to other broadcasters that get a job with the team and they're moving to a new city and they have to learn the team, learn the league, learn everything. But you're in a pretty good spot where you already know the Salt Dogs. You already got a relationship with Brett Jody. I have to imagine that there's a little less pressure for you coming into this as there would be somebody coming into a entire new job.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what you guys asked earlier. It's just a really good situation, I think, for everybody involved. And as you said, I don't really have to learn a new league. I'm very familiar with a lot of the players and a lot of the broadcasters within the league. Obviously, Brett Jody coming back as manager. He's a great guy, great manager as well. I'm just really easy to work with, especially for a broadcaster. So, yeah, the familiarity is great. And even within the Salt Dogs front office, too, we have a multitude of people coming back from last year, interns or not. Obviously, Charlie Meyer is there. Shane Tritz is there. And other full-time employees. So it's great to just kind of be back with a group that you know so much about and you get along well with and have fun with a lot of the days out of the summer. So, yeah, as you said, it's a pretty good situation and one that I'm certainly not taking for granted. And I do realize that this isn't a very common thing. So I'm going to definitely take it in stride and definitely take advantage of it as well.
When you got that call from Michael Dixon, did he offer you any advice right away, or is that just something that you've got his number, you can call him during the season as it comes up?
Yeah, I mean, when Michael called me, it was more of a like, hey, this is what's going on. I'm not coming back. Job is yours if you want it type thing. And what's been great with Michael, too, is over the last two seasons, I mean, we've become pretty good friends. So, I mean, we like to mess with each other. We like to give each other feedback. I mean, we can have fun. We can be serious. We can do all that type of stuff. He's the type of guy where I could give him a call whenever about something that, you know, like, hey, I'm struggling with this, whether that's baseball or not, honestly. So, I mean, the relationship that Michael and I have developed over the last 2 years has been great. And as far as advice goes, I mean, he's given me plenty of it over the last two seasons and has really helped me grow as a baseball broadcaster, specifically because of, you know, the specifics of the game. Baseball is a very detail-oriented game, and the more details that you're able to identify makes you a better baseball broadcaster, in my opinion. So I think the last 2 years' worth of advice, and I'm sure I'll text him or call him at some point throughout the season about something that I may be confused on or don't really get yet, but I know he's going to be there and have a great answer as well. So, yeah, he's been awesome to be around.
I'm sure he'll have advice if you're looking for stuff to do on the road. I'm sure he's got his particular restaurants or go-to places.
Yeah, that'll definitely be a question. I don't think I've been to many of the stops on the road in the league. I mean, I've been to Chicago because obviously that's where I grew up. So the last 2 years I've actually drove myself out there to do that road series with the team against the Dogs. I've driven past Gary a bunch, but yeah, I've never been to Cleaver, and I've never been to Fargo. I've never been to Sioux Falls, Sioux City. I've been to Kansas City once, but not for a Monarchs game, you know. So it's going to be an experience. So I'll have a lot of new things to try and check out.
In developing your relationship with Brett Jody, what are your thoughts about, you know, how do you connect with the manager so that you're not only providing good insights about the team, but you also are ensuring that you're presenting the team in a way that's favorable to your manager?
Yeah, I mean, Brett has a really good rap around Lincoln, and I think around the league as well. I mean, he's a very nice guy. He's upfront with you. He's going to, you know, tell you how he feels about stuff, but he's going to do it in a way that, you know, isn't offensive or anything, or isn't, you know, kind of standoffish. I mean, he's a pro. I mean, and he played in the big league, so he knows what that's like. He knows how to manage the guys in the clubhouse. He knows how to give advice. So, you know, being able to create a relationship with him has been awesome, and I'm sure it will continue to develop as we get to travel together and all that good stuff. So, just a guy that you can learn a lot about the game from. I mean, because he's been around the block. This will be his fourth season managing the Dogs. He was with Somerset before the Dogs. He won a league championship with the Patriots as well. So, it's just a really seasoned pro. And it's really interesting for me too to be around a guy like that who's, you know, grown up watching baseball. I actually have the Cubs on right now. Big Cubs fan. So, I mean, watched baseball my entire life, and all of a sudden to just kind of be, you know, coexisting with a former big leaguer as your club's manager, it's a pretty cool thing. And being able to learn from him and just kind of chat it up with him is pretty awesome.
This was a club that had looked like they could really make a serious one last season. The offense started to develop a little bit as the year was going along, but boy, that bullpen just never seemed to materialize to close out games. So as you look to this 2024 roster, what do you think is going to be different about this team? What should we expect from the Salt Dogs on the field?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a team that can be a pretty good team in the American Association. And you said it. I mean, the month of July last year, I mean, the Dogs looked like they were a contender for the Miles Wolf Cup. I mean, the offense was clicking. The pitching was great. And then the month of August, it was nearly the exact opposite. Things started to slip away. Runs came at a premium, and it was just, you know, kind of a downhill trend from then on. But, you know, the pitching staff, as you mentioned, there's only two returning pitchers, or three, rather, on this roster, with Abdallah Arias, Zach Keenan, and David Zaz, who's also returning. So there's going to be a lot of new faces in that pitching staff, a lot of new faces in the infield as well. But the names I look at that are huge returners for this team, Luke Roskin, who had a phenomenal year last year. He's a former Husker, so he's very comfortable in Lincoln, very comfortable at Haymarket Park. And you saw that, especially offensively, last season. Drew Devine is coming back. He was an all-star last year for the first time, played in all 100 games, started all 100 games, the Salt Dogs as well. And then Nick Anderson, another all-star, who is coming back as well, had a breakout year at 20 home runs. Only had three the year prior with King County. So he's an electric player, great defender, great hitter. Interested to see how he's going to do following up that all-star season. And then a couple of guys that I would like to see take the next step, and I think they can. We saw flashes from them last year, is Zane Zerbrug and Aaron Takis. I mean, Zerbrug had a four-hit game and a walk-off win, which he had the walk-off hit in July, which was great. Aaron Takis had a couple of big swings. Went on kind of a tear there in July as well with about a week or so with a couple of home runs in there as well. So I think there's a lot of talent on the field for the Salt Dogs team. And I think, you know, they can make it back to the playoffs. I know they missed it last year. 2 years ago, they snuck in on the very last day of the season. But I think this team can be one that pushes for a postseason spot.
One big difference for me personally is I've always been a huge fan of Nate Sampson. Love this guy very much. Amazing guy. I know he has a great influence on a team, just kind of being that guy in the clubhouse. It's kind of a manager as a player kind of thing there. But do you see him not necessarily joining the Salt Dogs this season as a hindrance to the team, or there's enough leadership on this club to be able to carry the club and not have to worry about that?
Yeah, I mean, Nate is great, and I think we're going to miss him this year because, you know, you mentioned his kind of his player-manager approach, and, I mean, he's a veteran, but, I mean, he has so much energy, and he's so, you know, youthful at the same time. I mean, he loves to have fun in the clubhouse. He loves to bring up the energy of the guys. He was great to me. He's great to everybody. So I think he will certainly be missed, but I think there is leadership within this clubhouse as well, especially, you know, Drew Devine is a guy who I thought took a bigger role vocally last year just because he was playing a lot and he was having a pretty good season as well. So I think he's taking the next step there. Nick Anderson is a little bit quieter of a dude, but he, you know, sets the standard with his play. I mean, he lets his play do the talking, and you saw that a lot last year. I mean, he was absolutely fantastic. And then when you have a guy like Brett Jody too, I mean, he's obviously a great leader. He gets along very well with the guys. And they know that he's been around the block. And when Skip's telling you something, I mean, you better listen because he knows what he's talking about. So I don't think this team is short of leadership, but what Nate was able to bring the club last year was pretty invaluable. And I think the Dogs are going to miss him.
You guys had probably the biggest promotion of the season last year, Drew. I think the largest crowd in Salt Dogs history. As you've looked at the upcoming season, is there something that jumps out at you about potential promotions this year that really would be pretty exciting?
Yeah, last year that was Taylor Swift night. And, of course, because she was going on her Eras tour around the country, she had shows in Kansas City, so we were giving out two pairs of tickets to those shows, and we ended up having a franchise record crowd of over 8,000 people that night, which was so much fun because rarely do you get that type of energy in the ballpark with that many people there. I mean, we get good crowds on the weekends pretty regularly, but you throw in 8,000 people at Haymarket Park, I mean, that's pretty much capacity for that place. So that was really cool just to kind of see the energy, and we ended up winning that game as well, so that made it even better. This year, I don't know yet because the schedule hasn't been released yet. That will be coming out on April 15th, so I can't really give you anything on that front. But I'm sure we'll have a couple of promotions that draw pretty well because we usually do have a yearly promotion that does pretty well. We have a beer fest every year, which usually draws pretty well. I believe that's on a Saturday in July. And then we have a Hispanic street festival as well, which also does really great attendance-wise. And there's a bunch of, you know, a bunch of food truck stations, you know, selling Mexican food. And it's, as a Mexican food lover and myself, I'm a big fan of that day. And that usually draws a pretty big crowd, too. So those are a couple of staples that usually do pretty well.
Well, speaking of food, and anyone that's listened to this show for a long time knows that my ears perk up when I hear food. I made my first trip down to Lincoln last year, and I didn't know till I got there that Runza sandwiches are legendary. I did not have one. Am I missing out by not having one? Are they as they say they are, or are they overrated?
That's the million-dollar question, I feel like, for anybody who hasn't had one. Because when I first came to school in Lincoln, I had never heard of a Runza. People started telling me that. I'm like, what is that? Like, why is this so important? Like, all the locals were like, oh, my God, Runza, Runza, Runza. And I tried it, and I think they're good. You know, I don't think they're life-changing, but, you know, it's kind of a staple, especially at football games. I mean, it's kind of one of those things, like, you go to a baseball game, you get a hot dog, right? Like, you go to a Nebraska football game, you get a Runza. So it's just kind of one of those things. I think they're way better when it's cold outside. Maybe that has something to do with the football thing. But they're good. I recommend getting the one with cheese in it. I think it adds a little bit more. But overall, I wouldn't give it a bad rating, but it's certainly not the best thing I've ever had.
You know, Connor, I've been curious about that. When you're looking out from the press box out past center field, you're looking at Nebraska Football Stadium right there. The campus is right there. Is the Nebraska University there? Are they as tightly tied to Lincoln Salt Dog baseball? Like, are students talking about that as this? You know, it's April, May, and the season's approaching. Like, what's the buzz about the Salt Dogs at the university? I'm just curious.
It's funny you ask that, because a lot of our production crew and a lot of our interns are actually within the College of Journalism and Mass Communications at Nebraska. So just like myself, a lot of our production crew are current students. So, I mean, it gets talked about a decent amount in our J school just because of the amount of people that work there. And then we all end up becoming friends because we're with each other so much out of the summer doing games. And some of those are pretty late nights. So I would say that that's the main talking point about the Salt Dogs, is the tie work-wise with the university is pretty good. We get a couple of students from Nebraska Wesleyan, which is just about 5 minutes east of downtown. So we get a couple of them as well. And then every now and then we get a couple of out-of-staters. That's a pretty rare occasion. But, yeah, I would say that the tie between the university and the Salt Dogs is pretty strong because, again, like, a lot of kids want to go and work in sports, and I know it's not a major league baseball team, but when you have a pro team right there in your backyard and they're offering you work opportunities, it's a really good spot to get started.
Do you find you get pockets of fans from the University of Nebraska during the summer, the ones that are staying for the summer, taking summer courses? To me, it just seems like that would be a marketing opportunity to try to get them to come to the ballpark.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, during the weekend, especially when it gets to be nicer out, I mean, our Friday crowds are great. We have fireworks at the end of the game too, every Friday home game. So we get a decent amount of college students for that. College students will be college students, so our Thirsty Thursday is pretty well attended with college kids as well, because we have $2 tall boys. But yeah, I would say, I mean, it's something to do. I mean, it's baseball at the end of the day, and people around here, you know, love the sport of baseball and like to just kind of have a relaxing night at the ballpark. And obviously it's affordable. It's close. It's convenient. It's not hard to get to. It's entertaining. It's fun, you know? So, there's a lot of draw for, you know, kids around my age and younger in college. It's just kind of a fun way to kind of immerse yourself further into Lincoln, something that's not necessarily university oriented, and just kind of get out and explore more. So, yeah, I would say we get a decent amount of college students per year.
I can remember late in the 2022 season, and Salt Dogs are fighting for a playoff spot that they eventually got. But I thought there was like a group of college students that were coming out to every game and just being really loud and really into it, and it seemed like it fired up the club a bit.
So there was a time when it was nearly every Thursday, there would be a group that sits behind the Salt Dogs dugout and a group that would sit behind the visitors dugout, and they would have a beer can pyramid competition, essentially. So whoever could build the bigger one without it collapsing would win. And we were doing a game, and I don't think the score was very close because we kept panning over to it on our video stream and talking about it on the radio. And then one of them finally fell over, and everybody kind of erupted in the crowd. And Michael and I look at each other. We're like, it's, you know, 11-3 or something. What's everybody getting up in arms about? And then we realize that there's just beer cans all over the visitor's dugout. And then we realize that there's another pyramid standing on the other side. So that was kind of funny. You know, the fans like to have a good time, and but when the game gets out of hand but they don't want to leave, they'll make their own fun. So it's definitely entertaining for us too.
So Connor, Michael claims that he is the biggest Rush fan on the planet. So is there a musical group that you would stake that kind of claim to?
I mean, that would be bold of me, because Michael is indeed the biggest Rush fan on the planet. I have never met anybody who is as passionate about a band as Michael Dixon is about the band Rush. If I had to choose a rock band, I mean, I grew up, because of my parents, listening to a lot of the Foo Fighters, which I think they're great. I've seen them in concert twice. My first Foo Fighters concert was actually at Wrigley Field in the summer of 2018. It was so awesome because we were lucky enough to get tickets like on the field. So me being A, there to see the concert, and B, being a baseball nerd and a huge Cubs fan, I'm standing where, you know, Chris Bryant would play third base, and I'm just kind of looking up and looking around. I'm like, wow, we're on the field at Wrigley Field right now, about to see a concert. So that was cool, but I wouldn't make the statement of that I am as big of a Foo Fighters fan as Michael is as big of a Rush fan, because that is a whole different level of fandom that I've never seen before.
Well, he talked about it quite a bit on the air early on when he was still down with the Cleveland Railroaders, and I know he loved the Rush a lot there. So Foo Fighters are good too, by the way. I like them too, Connor.
Yeah, Dave Grohl is the man. He's one of my favorites.
That's a good choice. Now, Connor, yesterday was April Fool's Day, as we're talking here. So you're a college kid, so I know you got to have some good April Fool's prank or something that you were involved in. So do you mind sharing that with us?
I actually didn't pull any pranks, and I was, you know, scrolling through Twitter, and then I saw a couple of stories that were a little far-fetched, and then I looked at the date. I'm like, oh, right, it's April 1st. And then I saw some of the tweets from around the league, like, you know, our tweet about old Homer coming back, or Chicago Dogs tweet about the deep dish uniforms. But as a native Chicagoan, I would love to actually see those uniforms happen. I know I work for the Salt Dogs, but I would probably get that just because of the deep dish on it. I saw that. And then as somebody who is a huge college basketball fan and has covered Nebraska basketball for the last couple of years, especially this year, pretty heavily, we had one of our guys enter the transfer portal, and I had my friend text me about it, and I texted him right back, "I don't believe you." And then, of course, it ended up being true. So I fell victim to the joke that wasn't a joke. So that kind of sucked, but I was not pulling any pranks yesterday.
I saw somebody on the American Association fan page on Facebook post that the Chicago Dogs signed Jose Sermo. And, you know, yeah, an April Fool's joke, but, I mean, in this league, that could easily be believable.
Well, I'll tell you this, and I saw this today, and I know today is not April Fool's, yesterday is, but I had to check the timestamp, and I saw the Monarchs signed Yermin Mercedes, and I thought that might have been an April Fool's joke, but then I saw it was tweeted today, and it certainly wasn't, so it's... That's going to be kind of weird seeing him in a Monarchs uniform, considering I saw him in a White Sox uniform not even 2 years ago.
And Lake Country said they were going to become the Flying Monkeys. And I looked at the logo, and I commented, I said, you know, I know it's April Fool's Day and everything, but that's a pretty sharp-looking logo. I wouldn't be ashamed of doing that at some point. Here they're going to be doing it for 3 days.
It did look pretty good.
Oh, I thought so.
Well, that's pretty impressive, Connor. Well, Kevin and I want to say we want to thank you very much for being on the show. But so you know, as a first-time guest, the guest gets to give us a final thought. So whatever you would like to talk about, the floor is yours.
Well, I guess my final thought is, you know, I'm very excited for this season to get going. I know it's going to be here before we know it. Looking forward to getting on the road, opening up the season in Fargo. That's going to be a ton of fun, and hopefully a lot of winning coming our way to Lincoln this year, and a lot of fun experiences with everybody from around the league. But really appreciate you guys having me on, and really excited to fill in a role that Michael had for quite a while. It's going to be big shoes to fill, but I'm very ready for the challenge.
Fantastic. Connor Clark, thanks for joining us here tonight.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
Appreciate it, guys.
Well, Kevin, great having Connor on here tonight. And, boy, that voice, and it just sounds like he's going to be a perfect fit there for Lincoln.
I think so. Like he said in the show, he's got some big shoes to fill with Michael Dixon leaving, but, you know, he's had a couple summers already to dip his toes in the water, so to speak, and I think we'll be seeing great things out of Connor this summer. Looking forward to hearing those broadcasts.
The American Association is better when we have somebody named Connor broadcasting games. I just think that's just a given at this point.
That's true.
So glad to see that again. Glad to see that again. Well, you know, besides big shoes to fill up there for Connor, Salt Dogs, we know, are looking to get that bullpen shored up after last year's struggles. And I'm liking the moves they're making. Luke Roskam returning to the club was just an amazing force out of there. Nick Anderson returning this season, too. And he, as Connor was talking about, quite the power hitter last season for the team. So looks like the bats are looking pretty good for Lincoln this year.
And, you know, that's a couple of core players right there. You know, the first half that Nick Anderson had was just, well, otherworldly. I know he faded a bit in the second half, but you got a feeling with the guys that are coming back, they have to feel like there's a little bit of unfinished business after missing out in the playoffs. So that could be their motivation to have a big season.
Absolutely. Well, let's dive around the league here in transactions. Besides the two there that we just talked about, Lincoln also signs catcher Max Hewitt, adds infielder Gavin Johns, and left-handed pitcher Adam Skogans will be joining the club. A big move out there in Kansas City, Kevin, as they sign Carlos Garcia, who was released today. Zach Levin, I believe is the way that's said, is signed as well. But then sign Alex Valdez and trade him away. It was a guy with that unbelievable fastball a couple of years ago, was closing out games for the Monarchs. Last year served in more of a setup role, was not as dominating, and now headed on his way out of town.
And maybe that was just something they knew beforehand, that maybe Joe owed the team a player and he may have signed Alex, just even telling them, hey, you know, we're signing you, but we're using you as a player to be named later for a previous trade. So, you know, without being in the, without being hanging out with Joe Calfapietro and talking to him, I guess, you know, we're just left to speculate on what the circumstances was on that.
Absolutely. I did forget to mention in Lincoln, right-handed pitcher Brandon McCabe and left-handed pitcher David Zaz joins the club as well. Continuing on in Kansas City, as mentioned, Carlos Garcia, their team released after signing him. They do sign catcher Herbert Iser and add catcher Hayden Jones and infielder Yermin Mercedes. I'm assuming, Kevin, by the signing of the two catchers over the last couple of days, that we will not be seeing the league MVP from last year.
Yeah, you know, it's very possible. I think it's a thing where we're going to find out after the season begins that a lot of guys that were big names in this league last season may have gone on to go play in the Mexican League. It seems like right now it's going to be a very popular option for players. Chris Herman, you know, hard to say. Maybe he decided to hang it up. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, you always want to end on a high note in your career kind of thing. But, wow, he showed that he could still play. And maybe that's the part that he's also looking at, too, is that he had such an impressive year but did not return to affiliate ball, and maybe just thought to himself, okay, you know, I won a championship. I had an incredible season. Got all kinds of accolades in my final year. Maybe it's his time to call it quits there. I would totally understand that. So see how that comes down. Also for Kansas City, Kevin, they sign right-handed pitcher Jonathan Sprinkle and add in left-handed pitcher Nicola Panazzi, I believe the way that is said. So Joe working on building out his roster there as we're moving along. The Lake Country Dockhounds signed right-handed pitcher Alan Zhang Carter, and I believe they had one other transaction this week. No, that was it. Cleburne a little bit busy this week as they acquire Brian O'Grady, the championship series hero with a big hit there from Kansas City. He is signed by Cleburne. They also released catcher Austin Bernard, and that was and had we already talked about those moves last week. But Brian O'Grady had the big moment for Kansas City last year, season there in the championship series, Kevin, and so he's bringing that championship flavor to Cleburne to help build that club into a championship team this year.
You know, he had a good pedigree, but he didn't put up huge numbers. But like you said, you know, some of these guys are just going to you get remembered for one hit, and that would be the case with O'Grady getting the walk-off hit to win the championship for the Monarchs.
Absolutely. Catcher Anthony Alvarez signed by Chicago. They also signed right-hander Jason Billows, I believe that was said, and infielder Anthony Calarco. Man, I got to work on these names. Fargo signed right-handed pitcher Tristan Wirtz. And a nice move for Gary out there, Kevin. They signed infielder Gio Diaz, who had a monster season, or monster beginning at least, for Lake Country a couple years ago. Struggled after being sent to Kansas City in a trade and really, you know, moved around a bit last season and didn't have a huge power numbers. So I think Gary's hoping that he'll be that right-handed bat they could depend on for another, you know, maybe 15 homer season and really help those Railcats to be competitive.
And it always helps to go back into a situation in which you are familiar with the team and the ballpark too.
Absolutely. Milwaukee signs left-handed pitcher Mitchell Tyranski, and a move that Kevin and I are super happy to see because we like this guy very much. Sioux Falls officially signs right-handed pitcher Ryan Zimmerman. So we know Ryan can pitch well in that ballpark because we've got to see him do it many times over his career. But be exciting. It's going to be interesting to see him in that yellow uniform and not a black one this year. But Ryan, we hope, has great success.
Yeah, you know, Mom, Pa, Zimmerman, their drive just got a lot shorter to go see him pitch.
Yes, it did. And I'm glad to see him back because he told us at the championship series last year, or maybe it was at the All-Star game, that last year was likely going to be his final season, but deciding to put back on the cleats for another year. So we're pretty excited for Ryan out there. So, beautiful. Transactions around the other leagues, nothing really big in terms of connections to the American Association other than Alex Valdez heading for Evansville. There wasn't any other ones that I saw, nope. And then in the Atlantic League, there wasn't anybody that I – Wellington Dotel signed with Hagerstown. Nick Leo signed with Lexington, former Canaries guy. Neil Lang, left-handed pitcher, signed with Southern Maryland. Mike
Clubber.
Matt Bocher from Chicago. Which one?
Clubber. Clubber Lang.
Clubber. Clubber Lang. That's what we're talking about. Matt Bocher signed with Lexington from Chicago. And I think that there was one more that I saw here. No, I think that might have been it. Okay. No, I think that might have been it. All right. So that's your movement around the independent baseball, or partner league baseball, I should say, for this time. Kevin, as we're 5 weeks away from the season getting underway here, we've had a chance to watch a lot of roster moves that have been going on and see signings and trades that have gone on. Is there anybody really at this moment that you're kind of looking at and going, wow, I'm impressed by what I'm seeing here, or is it just hard to tell at this point?
It's hard to tell at this point. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of new names in the league this year, and that's going to lead to a lot of unknowns as the season dawns upon us in a matter of so many days here. So I think a lot of us are going to be left guessing or having to do a lot of baseball reference research to find out which teams have built up the most equity during the offseason.
You know, Kevin, an interesting point that you've made to me over the last four or five seasons has been I'll look at a roster like Kansas City or King County in previous years and go, wow, you know, they're like four or five guys and we're nearing April 30th. And you'll make the point, which is a great point, that a lot of times a guy could have a contract in place, but they just don't tell us about it yet. It's just not officially released as information at that point. So then you see you know, 18 guys signed over the final week before spring training gets underway or something. But boy, it looks like everybody's really jumping into the action. We've even seen George Samus up there in Kane County has about 10 guys or 11 guys signed already. And so is it teams feel the necessity to start getting these names out earlier, or is it that they really are signing earlier? I mean, there's not a deal and, you know, kind of on, you know, agreed with a handshake, but formal contracts are getting in place because teams feel an obligation to start getting this information out there now.
I'm going to just take a completely uneducated guess and say that I think the Mexican League has had an effect on this, that guys want to try to, if they see a quality player, they've seen a known commodity, they want to get them locked up before somebody else does. You know, if Team A has lost three guys to the Mexican League, they might go after someone on your team that was a top-end player, so you want to get them locked up before someone else gets talking in the ear about joining them.
That's a very good point.
And I could be completely wrong on that, and that's kind of my charm, so.
No, I think that's a very legitimate point that you're making out there. We talked to quite a few people that have said that the Mexican League turning independent and, you know, looking to get those contracts signed are reaching into American Association, Atlantic League, and Frontier League and trying to find guys to fill their rosters. And we're seeing, you know, Kevin McGovern headed that way and a bunch of other guys headed back to Mexico. So it would not be surprising to see that kind of teams going, okay, well, we got to lock guys in now. We can't be having a handshake deal right now. We're going to have a formal contract signed and sent to the league, or else we're taking a risk of losing this guy. So, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to really start diving into these rosters over the next couple of weeks to learn more about a lot of these guys out here. But as you're mentioning, there are a lot of people out here that I haven't even really seen them in like Frontier League action or in the Atlantic League. So I think we're going to see a whole lot of players who are new to partner league baseball. And I'm interested to see what the kind of, you know, attitude and impact these guys have, because we've heard so many times, Kevin, about how a guy comes to partner league baseball and with a big chip on his shoulder, he's too good for this, he can't believe this is going to be super easy, and then they struggle. Or a guy goes, this is an opportunity for me to really bounce back in my career. So then we're going to get a lot of very interesting stories this year.
I think so, and I think that's where you have to give a lot of credit to the managers throughout the league who have to do the due diligence of taking a dive into player stats, maybe even calling around, getting some references on their character before signing them. So, you know, it's just not as easy as saying, hey, I pick you, you're with us. It's not like,
yeah.
It's not like picking a kickball team in fourth grade.
Very, very true. Well, Kevin, how about shout outs for this week?
Well, my shout out this week is going to be to our guest from 2-3 weeks ago, Ryan Supple of the Sioux City Explorers, because if you remember, he was a little floored with having to do the final thought. So I kind of threw it out there who he got in the NCAA tournament. And it was an underdog, but he said North Carolina State, and right now North Carolina State is 2 wins away from a national championship. So Mr. Supple made a pretty good call there,
I would say. My shout-out for this week, Kevin, goes out to the Kane County Cougars and our buddy Joe Brand out there. So I will say, so yesterday I'm sitting at work, and I'm just kind of scrolling through Twitter really quickly as I turned away just to kind of see what was going on out there. And I got suckered into the Dontrell Willis tweet that they had out there. So I reached out to him. I was like, Joe, can we get him on our show next Monday? And he was like, April Fool.
Oh, my God.
It's like, oh, man. So I just told her, I said, don't talk to me anymore, Joe. But that was a good one. So sometimes you're just forgetting what day of the year it is. And so I got caught. So good for you guys. You got me for this year. So that's my shout out for this week.
So how long did you bleed from the mouth?
I just thought to myself, wow, I should have known better about that. But, you know, sometimes you're just not thinking about what day of the year it is, and they got me. So I'm okay with that. I thought it was good-natured. Yeah. So I'm perfectly fine with that.
Wow, that hooked on you pretty good.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did, for sure. So good for them.
Yeah,
I think that's
personally, I gave up on April Fool's jokes after the one I pulled off, I believe, in 2016. I know my mother was still alive because I got a phone call from her that day. But I had put out a tweet and a Facebook post that I had accepted a job as media relations director for the Silver Bay Shoremen of the North Central Collegiate Baseball League. And I had, like, people from the St. Paul Saints congratulating me, and relatives were, like, getting home. You know, this could be a big move for you. And my own mom even called. She goes, what's this with you moving up north? And I had wrote a blog later that night, and if you took the first letter from each paragraph and you spelled it out, it spelled Happy April Fool's Day. So with all the people I lured in on that, that was my drop the mic moment. And after that, I was done with April Fool's Day because there was no way I was going to top that.
Well, that's pretty awesome, though. You got to like that. Well, Kevin, that is a really good practical joke right there, but and there's not a really a good segue about this, Kevin, at all. But we do want to end on this show talking about a sad moment for the Gary South Shore Railcats, this news this last week, Kevin. And we really wanted to end the show with this, Kevin, because sad loss for the organization and a guy who was just a class act for them.
Yeah, the longtime public address announcer for the Gary South Shore Railcats, Tommy Williams, passed away a little over a week or so ago, and I never got a chance to meet him. I've never got a chance to go to the Steelyard, but just from, you know, from all the tributes that rolled in throughout the league, you can just tell that Williams was just so well respected by his peers and of course the fans, and it's a big loss for the Railcats organization.
You know, and we don't like to end on a sad note here on the show, and so we're not really, because Tommy was amazing. I got to sit next to him on a number of games. He always was great to listen to his stories, and it was just fun the way that he did the PA there. It was super cool, just a great guy. And so this is really just, Kevin, my tribute to talk about what an amazing part of Gary South Shore Railcats baseball he was. And while it's a sad moment to think about him moving on, his legacy is going to last there a really long time. And, you know, Kevin, we a lot of times think about teams in relation to managers and ownership groups and players. But the longtime people out there are those, you know, PA guys, that usher that, you know, has been around a long time, or the guy, you know, selling hot dogs that everybody knows or something. And Tommy Williams is going to be a guy that everybody in Gary knows and his is going to remember forever.
I think it would be very appropriate for them to do something like, you know, some sort of tribute, maybe make it the Tommy Williams press box or just do some in ballpark tribute to him. So I'm sure they'll come up with something like that.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin and I want to thank Connor Clark for joining us here tonight. For Kevin Loco, I'm Rob Pannier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association. Man, I almost forgot that. That would have been real bonehead of me right there. Boy. Wow.
Yeah, okay. You and I both.